Welcome to another episode of the Chopped Liver Podcast. We are your hosts, Elise and May, and today we're getting into part two of our episode with Daniel Feinberg. Enjoy.
I've seen apprentices in action. So what their mentor told them, it's like, oh, okay, as soon as you've now finished that step, you can move on to tattooing skin. So they were working on fake skin and bananas, the whole spiel.
Bananas?
And yeah.
Bananas.
Is that like a real thing?
Yeah,
grapefruit.
Skin, grapefruit skin.
Yeah, like actual grapefruit and like an actual banana. So you can test how deep you're going. I'm talking as if I know what I'm talking about.
It's pretty similar to skin. It's not like human skin, but it's enough for when you're learning. It teaches you to hold the machine. It teaches you how to pull a straight line over a very strange organic curve, because the entire body, there's nothing symmetrical about the body. I mean, from your elbow down to your wrist, it's not just a truncated cone where it's got this diameter at your elbow and a smaller diameter at your wrist. Like, as you go down, it gets large in some areas and small in other areas. So you got to learn to be able to hold that needle at the same depth as you're pulling it across the skin without pushing in or pulling out, because it's not just, I mean, you're holding the machine, and as you're moving across the body, you're stretching with the other hand so you can get a clean line, and the body is doing this, and you've got to keep a straight line. You've got to be able to exercise the muscles in your fingers, like playing the drums or a guitar. You can't just, even if you knew how to do it, if your hands don't have the muscles to do it, you can't do it until you build up that
muscle memory.
Yeah, totally.
And so she's like, so she did her bananas, and now she's moving on to like that silicon fake skin.
Yeah.
And her mentor's like, okay, next you can tattoo real skin. But I love that she was like, oh, okay, cool, I'll get my friends. And so he's like, no. You get in the people that you don't like. You're going to make some really shitty tattoos. So, yeah, and the thing is, like, you learn your tattoo for free. You're going to have to learn. But they were like, don't bring in your friends. Don't bring in the people that you actually like. Because you need to, as much as you're getting off a free tattoo, that's why I'm always like, a free tattoo? No, it's not something that I really am interested in.
So what's interesting, and this is how it happened with me at Handstyle when Ross was my mentor, and it wasn't just Ross who taught me, it was everyone else in the studio. I learned so much from an artist who was working there named Wes von Blerk. I learned from a guy called Paul Colcott, my ex-business partner, Phil Wells. He also taught me a lot. It's kind of weird. It's like you're one person's apprentice in the shop, but everyone kind of, all the other artists, if they're nice enough, will give you a hand. There was another artist named Mersha Haystack, who helped me so much. It was, you know, I'm so grateful for these people. But Ross's system in that shop, and I'm sure me calling it Ross's system is a little incorrect, because he got it from someone who got it from someone who got it from someone. So I got to a point where I was like, done with the grapefruit, and I'm done. Never got to use pigskin. Some people use pigskin. I just use grapefruit and melon and bananas. So now it's time for my first tattoo. And Ross at Handstyle was like, right, it's going to be your first tattoo. You can only charge 200 Rand for the tattoo. Don't make it too big. Make sure it's simple. I'll take a look at what you have to do. And then for a while, as an apprentice, you tattooed what, as a professional, you would charge between 600 to like 1,500 Rand, you know, small little tattoos. And what was so amazing is that there are actually people, and these clients are very special, who want to support the apprentice. I had so many people coming in saying, wow, it's your first tattoo. Please, I would love to get it. It's almost like I met people who collected apprentice tattoos in a way of encouraging the apprentices. And I thought that was so amazing, because they know it's a mixed bag. This could come out really badly, or it could come out okay. And people came to me with an open heart, and they were like, wow, okay, let's do this. Put this on me. And they weren't good tattoos, because like very few, like apart from the few like genius tattooers that on their first tattoo, they make amazing tattoos. They weren't great tattoos, but a lot of concentration and love and support went into it from them as much as I put into the tattoos myself. Mm-hmm. And that is a wonderful thing. It was very special, though. I saw that at Handstyle. I don't know if other studios do it, but that's how Ross dealt with these apprentices. Mm-hmm. And it was a very wholesome experience to meet people who were so willing to let you take a chance on their skin. Mm-hmm. And obviously, like, you're an apprentice and you're nervous and you want it to be perfect and you do your best. And they can kind of see that it's not quite turning out so great, but they generally like... Thanks, man. Well done. Second tattoo, awesome. It was supposed to be a cat. Looks a little bit like a horse, but I'm down. Like, one day when you're a famous tattoo artist, I can say, look, he did one of his first tattoos on me.
That's amazing. I mean, I sort of get like goosebumps thinking about these people who are so gracious and like in it. And even when you were talking about collecting apprentice tattoos, I'm so fascinated by that. You know, the tattoo as this art form, that's appreciated. And I know in Japan they also skin some, you know, there are some skin tattoos framed. I don't know if it's like here as well.
No, you get that. It's specifically at the Tokyo Medical, I think there's a museum at the Tokyo Medical University. They have some skins, flayed skins, like 120, 130 years old.
And that's so incredible. And I get it's quite grim to some, I suppose, but I get very excited about that because it really is prolonged appreciation for the art of tattooing. And I think that it's still so very much misunderstood and underappreciated as an art form in itself. And as you said as well, even if it's a flash tattoo, if it's a copy paste situation, there's still someone's hand has made that.
For sure.
It's handmade.
And there's a beauty in that. That is an art up. Like a Japanese, I think Japanese tattoos have a very long old tradition. Western tattoos have less old tradition, but there is, as I said before, there's a place for it. There's a place for the tattooer who does a flash piece of a rose that thousands of other artists have done over the last 60 years. That is still a beautiful piece of art. It's such, tattooing is so big. There's place for everything. There's place for little sort of what some people call ignorant art, which I hate that term. And they do like little rough hand poke pieces which look like they've been hand drawn. There's a beauty to that. There's a beauty to the American traditional stuff that is actually as simple as it is and as sort of crude as some of the designs can be. There's a beauty to it. There's a cleanliness of lines and a sharpness and a simplicity which just, it's so incredible. It's such a big art form and there's place for everything except obviously really bad tattoos. And the really bad tattoos are also sometimes not so bad. Like when you sometimes, occasionally you'll get like a 60-year-old man walk into the studio and he walks in and he shows you his forearm and he's got like an anchor with like a little scroll at the bottom with the name of his mom. And it looks so messed up. If you look at it from today's standards, the lines are blown out. Nothing is straight. It's spread under his skin. He didn't use sunscreen for the last 7 decades. So it's totally like you can see liver spots growing on top of it. And you can just barely make out that it's an anchor. And you know what? It is so beautiful. It's like being in an art gallery and seeing a piece by a master that you grew up loving in school, and now you're in London at the Tate, or now you're in Paris at like the Louvre, and you finally get to see the artwork. It has a presence. It has a life. Old, bad, and good tattoos have a presence.
A lot of people get tattoos for different reasons. Mine is, I just think they're beautiful, and I'm very grateful that I have one of Amay's beautiful artworks on me that
really
lovely
beautiful.
Dan tattooed
we
on
had so it. Much fun making that.
It's amazing. And can I just say, every single person at the Devcrit workshop was freaking out about this tattoo that you
so good.
Adapted, which is, it's amazing. I just want to cry.
But this is the other thing, though. Sorry to interrupt you. This is the other thing about tattoos like that. Think about that. That's your artwork that I tattooed on your best friend. And I was pulled into this whole thing and we developed it and we worked together. And something that a lot of people don't get, and they might not agree, other tattoo artists might not agree, but it's a collaboration with your client. You don't just have a piece of meat that's coming in to sit still so you can take money from them and you can put your art on them. I approach it in a very collaborative kind of a way because it's going on someone else's body forever. Whether it's I'm getting this tattoo because I know I'm going to look badass, or I'm getting this tattoo because my best friend made this print and I'm so proud of her and I love her artwork so much. It's a collaboration, and you need to gel with your client. And I'm not saying you need to get like immensely personal and it becomes like this, you know, barman on steroids situation where you both like let out your hearts to each other. That can happen, but there has to be a sinking of just seeing eye to eye and just wanting to do the best for that person, and that person wanting to make your job as easy as possible so you two can come out with a piece of artwork that looks great.
That's what I always tell people about when they're trying to find a tattoo artist. It's like, of course, you're like, do your research. And it's like, but it is so important because I feel like getting a tattoo is an extremely intimate experience, because not only are you putting something, it's a painful experience, I'm not going to take that away from tattooing, but you're having this person very close to you, physically very close to you,
yeah,
and you want to get along with them.
Totally.
I mean, if anyone's ever listened to any of our episodes of our podcast, collaboration is key. And it's like, that's so a part of it, because my experience of getting tattooed by you, it's very much like, hey, this is what I have in mind, taking everything that you're good at and giving you free range to do that, but also having it so like I'm comfortable with this on my body. Is it going to fit right? And it's also very much trusting that person that they know what they're doing. Like, mm. I was telling Amay earlier, like getting a tattoo is very much a great exercise in trust.
Mm.
It is.
Trusting that person's skill. But I'm curious, like, say now, what is your process when it comes to having a client come in to get a custom piece done?
My approach will be like different. I like to think that I'm not so arrogant that I won't do non-Japanese tattoo work, because I do a lot of just non-Japanese tattoos. But you got to approach it with the same passion and the same need to give someone something that they really like, whether it's doing the artwork that you want to do or whether it's doing something that the client comes to you specifically. So in terms of a client who doesn't want Japanese work, if they come to me with an artwork, I have a couple of considerations. If they're bringing me an illustration from an artist working somewhere in the world, and they want that exact illustration put on their body, is I will make a point of contacting that illustrator on Instagram and just saying, hey, I've got a client, they really want to put your artwork on their body, like, would it be okay if I could do this? So that would be the first consideration in terms of using someone else's artwork. As I said before, with Japanese work, I get anxious when I see people like doing it's because I respect traditional Japanese tattooing, is when I see some people who just copy other artists' work. It's just not cricket. It's just so, there's something so gross about it. So someone will come in and they'll ask me, they'll show me a Pinterest image of a tattoo. This is exactly what they want. It's a very simple tattoo. It's a geometric design. It's got a palm tree and it's got some lines and dashes and dots and arrows and circles. And then what I will do is I will ask them, oh, you want this exactly? Because other people have this exact same tattoo and I don't feel comfortable tracing someone else's tattoo directly. So I like to change it up a bit. So I'll give them the concept that they asked for, but I won't copy it exactly. It's a gray area. I don't know if that's such a good thing to do. But if someone really wants that, then that's what they want. And at the end of the day, it is a form of commercial art, so you do it. In terms of Japanese work, I have a very different approach. I always want to meet the person before I start the work. So we'll have a consultation. We'll see if we can gel. As you said before, this is a collaboration. It's a team effort. I've got to know that if you are going to come and sit for me to do a leg sleeve or an arm sleeve, and it's going to be 7 full day sessions, we're going to be in a situation where the person is in a lot of pain, where we're going to have a lot of time to talk. There's going to be a lot of weird silent moments, and there's going to be a lot of moments where the client is really struggling to sit still and I'm really struggling to do my best work. It's going to be an intimate situation. It's not intimate in a friend, like the way you would be intimate with a husband or a wife or a best friend, it's a very strange, specific intimacy. It's a collaborative intimacy, and you do get close to people. So I would sit with them and see if we gel, and if we gel, fine. And they'll say, okay, I love koi. I want to get a koi leg sleeve. And I'll say, okay, fine, no problem. What kind of koi do you like? Do you want them swimming upstream or downstream? If they're swimming upstream, it has this kind of connotation. And then I'll coach them through the little that I know about the traditions and the meanings and the mythology and where things should be and where things should not be and what things should be paired together. So I'll educate. I will give them my knowledge of what I've been able to accrue over the years with regards to the tattoo. If they're happy with that, then I will go and I'll draw. My drawing process is kind of strange. I've developed a very long-winded way of doing things, but I'm very happy with my outcome. Is I will, on paper, I will obviously sketch out my shapes and my composition. What I do is, say for instance, it's a leg sleeve. I will take plastic and I'll wrap it around the person's leg until I make a big, thick cast, and then I'll cut it at a certain area, marking out where the knee is, marking out where the back of the knee is, and I'll lay that out and then put my tracing paper on top of that and just play with the composition. Then more tracing paper, refine the design. More tracing paper, refine the design. Get to a point where I'm happy, then I will photograph, then I will put it in my iPad, and then I will start cleaning up the lines in the iPad just to make sure that everything is clean and everything works. I need to, at this stage in my career, because I've only been doing this really for 4 years, I will use any tools that I can to ensure that whatever I'm putting on your body, I'm not going to make a terrible mistake. I'm not going to make a proportion mistake. I'm not going to make a mistake of how things fit together. Then once I've done it on the iPad, I'll print it out again to scale. So lots of like A4 sheets stuck together, because when you use an iPad, there are more disadvantages than advantages for tattoo drawing, because you can zoom into what you're doing and you can get really bogged down with the detail that's going to be like a square centimeter on a person's skin. But on your iPad screen, it's like A4 size. So the particular problem with that is line weights. So that you use a certain thickness of lines depending on the size of the tattoo, and you lose that with the iPad. You can also get a very computer-generated stampy feel from using the iPad. That's why it's very important that I basically draw it all out by hand first. Then I print it out. Then I retrace it to scale with the correct sizes. Then I photograph it again, and then I just quickly line it up, and then I put it through to the stencil. Then the person comes in on the day, and I take everything that I've drawn and I slice it up into like 20 pieces. And I basically look at the person's leg or their arm and I make a collage on them with the elements that I've drawn for this tattoo. Because as I said, I haven't had a traditional mentor to really teach me how to put that sort of thing together. What I noticed when I was in Shanghai at the convention is we use stencil machines. It's like part of the way we do in the West. There wasn't a stencil booth. Cape Town, the Cape Town convention, they have a specific booth for all the artists working there. You draw up your work, you take it to the stencil booth. The stencil booth makes your stencil, so you can go back and you can put a perfect stencil on someone's body and you can make sure that you have a beautiful tattoo. Not a stencil machine. And this is apparently how it works in Asia. 90% of all the designs that went onto people's bodies, and I'm talking specifically about the artists from Korea, Japan, and China, hand-drawn directly onto the skin.
That's crazy.
It is crazy. Such a thing to see. It's amazing.
Mm.
And that's where I'd like to get to one day. But, you know, I'm still using stencils. So I make a collage, and it actually works better that way. A flat piece of paper, even though you've taken a cast of someone's leg or their arm with plastic, it's never the same when you try to put it on someone's body.
Mm-hmm.
It's never the same.
Yeah, I mean, I'm curious to also find out, you know, you're making this drawing and you're having this consultation and you're doing all these things. And what happens if they don't like it, the drawing? Like what? Or, you know, because you're obviously consulting with them before on a custom piece and... Yeah, what happens if I don't like it?
Well, that's quite a big thing. So often, like most tattoo artists, well, like I'm not talking about guys who are working out of their, you know, garage and stuff, but established artists who have been doing this for a long time, who create quality, authentic work, I don't think a lot of them will give you the image before you come. It's kind of like, you're coming to me, you've seen my work. If you like my work, I will do a drawing for you. And on the day, you'll see the artwork and we'll put it on. And if there needs to be a change, a little change, it's kind of accepted. I have never had someone really come in before on the day and say like, oh my God, I don't like it. I suppose it does happen. And I will, during the process of me drawing, I will send the odd element to my client, which I know a lot of tattoo artists will never do that. They will never send you the drawing before the tattoo because they could just take the drawing and they could go get it tattooed by someone else. But this is why this consult intimacy is important for me. This trust is important because I need to know that if I'm doing this artwork for you, you're not going to do that. And you can never be such a good judge of people, but it actually hasn't happened to me before. So I'm fine with changes. Being an architectural designer, being an architectural visualizer, every single day I would have stuff required to be changed. So you've got to, what that did for me, and I think it's an advantage, is it killed that, you know, a lot of artists have this soul connection with their creations. And if you ask them to change it, it's kind of like you're tearing their heart into bits. And there's this anguish like, oh my God, this is perfect. I don't want to change it. This person doesn't know what they're talking about. This is so ignorant. It's not going to work. Like when I was in architectural visualization, every day there were changes. I once worked on something. I had not slept for 48 hours. Worked on a rendering for a certain big supermarket chain, and the rendering came up beautifully. It was going to be a great building. It was presented to the clients, and the first thing they said in the presentation after me not sleeping for 2 days was, oh my God, way there in the background, can you see the parking lot in the back? Yeah, there's a black man. He's running. It looks like he's stolen something. You've got to change the rendering.
Oh my goodness.
And this is like 2 hours before the main presentation to everyone and to the funders. And you can sit there agonizing about, this is so stupid. I mean, this is racist and it's ridiculous and it's such a small part of the rendering. Or you can just suck it up, do what you got to do, make the changes and not let it affect your happiness and your state of being. And that's how I approach changes with tattooing. It doesn't bother me unless... specifically with Japanese tattooing, if it goes against my limited knowledge of what should be correct and what would be completely incorrect. I do have that line and I won't move past that. And if someone says, okay, no, then okay, no. But I have to have principles. And the small amount of knowledge I've been able to build up and develop and get, I can't sacrifice that just to make someone happy. There'll be someone else who comes and does appreciate it. But as I say again, this is a very rare thing. It's happened maybe once. Maybe once.
Yeah. Look, it's so important, actually. And it's great that you're able to share in that way and that's your background, that's kind of facilitated how you approach, how you work with clients. And someone like me would really be appreciative of that, you know, very insecure, like having to get an image on your body. And, you know, you're not just going to let people do what they want. So I think that, you know, if that's very different in your practice, that's quite significant. And I think very special about the way that you do it.
It has to be. You have you getting the tattoo. It's going to be on your body forever. And bar certain things, you've got to be happy with that. So yes, a lot of artists feel like I'm not going to make that change because I want to do the best tattoo that I do, that everyone knows me for. So because you're not giving me the opportunity to do my work on you, then I'm not going to do your work. And I'm not like that. But with Japanese work, I am a little more like that just because I don't want to put something out that some master overseas will take a look at and think, oh my God, this is like someone getting a kanji tattoo, which they were told means honor, but it really says dog. You know, I'm terrified of that.
No one wants that.
No.
What I find so exciting about the tattoo industry as a whole is that within like the last, I'd say within the last decade, it has something that has blown up commercially and has entered the mainstream in a way that has never existed before. I still get a lot of people, older generation people, that's like, oh, wow, tattoos can be pretty. I'm like, yes, they're not just barbed wire and skulls and like, but don't get me wrong, there's some barbed wire and skulls that look incredible artworks.
Totally, there's a place for it.
There's a place for it. But in some areas, the stigma has broken down of what tattoos are and what they mean. But there are still in a lot of cultural spaces and in society, even within South Africa, where tattoos are still frowned upon. There is still that idea that it is, I'm not saying that isn't, but it's related to criminal spaces. It does have that history and that has to be acknowledged, but it is also something that is far more accepted. And I just wanted to know what your opinion is on the fact that how the tattoo industry has grown into the mainstream.
Well, it's a big field. I mean, tattooing it's so huge. There's so many different kinds of tattoos. As you say, there's so many different cultural experiences of a tattoo. Sort of in the Cape Flats, if someone gets a gang tattoo, it's very different to someone in the West Rand getting a dollar rose with a compass in a black and gray style. These are not... The symbols, they have different meanings. And as you say, culturally, they are different. There's a place for them all. There are always going to be people who are going to be resistant towards the tattoo, whether they grew up in a crime area where there are gangs and their association with tattoos is, no, you must be a gang member. Sometimes that just comes from a kind of a... I find that a lot of people, a lot of clients who come in and they kind of want to get a tattoo, but when they start saying all the reasons why they don't think they should, and you hear these reasons are very old-fashioned reasons, and you know that this client heard this from their parents. They are parroting what their parents said, obviously, because there's an emotional bond between a parent and a child, and a parent tells a kid what they should and shouldn't do. Some children are rebellious. Some children like to be good kids. And then it's actually, you can even trace that attitude back to an even earlier time. It's kind of strange, but it's so big. It's very difficult to pin it down. There's always going to be people resistant to it. And as far as it becoming more commercial and more accessible, a lot of older tattoo artists lament this. They think this is a terrible thing because you are removing it from being in the, say for instance, it being a very niche subcultural thing where it was actually like a rite of passage in the case of Polynesian tattoos or Yakuza tattoos, or even in the Western context when, you know, like bikers would get specific tattoos, which you should not tattoo on a non-biker even to this day. There's always going to be that element which is going to suffer from the commercialization of the art. But I think it's a wonderful thing. Mm. And a lot of tattoo artists will disagree with me because it's actually, if you think about it and if you look at it historically, it's a very natural human impulse to want to decorate your body, whether it is just for the sake of aesthetics or whether it's because of a medical reason or a spiritual reason. There was the mummified remains of a man who was found in a glacier somewhere in Northern Europe, and he had tattoos, and it's a very specific kind of a tattoo. There were lots of dot dashes, and the way they used to do it, anthropologists, scientists have found that it was probably a needle made from a whalebone with some sort of a thread that had been put through, and then that thread is covered in soot or grime from a burning fire, and then actually sewed through the skin. And as the needle goes into the skin and comes out the skin, as you pull the thread through with the soot, it creates a little dash. So this is 12,000 years ago or 12,000 BC. I'm not entirely sure of the facts. back then people were getting tattooed, and they found, when you look at his bones, his bones were fractured. I think he had a fractured knee at one stage in his life. He had like a dislocated shoulder, that these tattoos were found in these areas where they could see that there were injury. So Otzi, whatever tribe he belonged to, whatever culture he belonged to, was getting tattooed 12,000 years ago. They've recently found a mummified body of an Egyptian woman, 20,000 years old, who has cosmetic tattoos. She has her eyebrows done. She has eyeliner that has been tattooed. She has lips. There's no discernible medical or superstitious reason for this. It looks very much like she got tattooed 20,000 years ago to adorn her body. It's a very natural human impulse. And since post-Victorian era, it kind of became unacceptable for good society to get tattoos, and then there were criminal and you know, negative connotations to it. But I think now with the commercialization, we're liberating a beautiful art form from all these negative associations. So that's where I think the commercialization, and it's now it's very obvious abundance through culture, I think it's wonderful. You wanna mark your body, you wanna get a tattoo. It's not just for criminals, it's not just for bikers. Tattoos have power. They always have had power. They make you feel powerful. My first tattoo was my Japanese back piece of a giant tiger. And the reason that motif was chosen was because I needed to channel fiercer, more go-getter energy. I totally felt it. A lot goes into it. Funny thing is, though, about those tattoos, there was a period when it was totally okay within the West to get tattoos. Sailors were traveling around the world, and whenever they went to, say, whether it was Polynesia or Borneo, and they would come back with tattoos, that this was an amazing thing. And then something just happened. I don't know if it's Industrial Revolution or post-Victorian Revolution. Something happened where all of a sudden this just became a bad thing, because sailors and drug addicts and criminals, and we're liberating that right now. It's, as I said earlier on, with Japanese tattooing, contextually in Japan, it's still seen as something other, something that you're not supposed to do. It's still associated with the Yakuza, but you change the cultural context, you put it into the West, and you should, it's beautiful. People love it.
There's often that thing where it's like, people's arguments, like, your body's the temple. And it's like, but how many temples and religious spaces have you seen that aren't adorned?
Totally.
They have images, they have artworks, they have these things. And it's like, there's ways to celebrate your own body and your own experience. And this is kind of just a way to do that, as much as you'll have people who cut their hair into different styles.
Exactly.
Get ear piercings, wear makeup. This is a way of adornment that I'm really excited to see how it is entering more of the mainstream and where there is so much more freedom with it. And there's, I think once people start to see that as a form of individual expression and artistic style, and there is artistic merit to these pieces, I think that is slowly starting to gain, especially with our rise of our social media and everything like that. There's so much scope for greater and bigger things for the entire industry.
It's amazing. And there's always going to be bad tattoos. And there's always going to be, you know, there's always going to be a negative side to this acceptance and this commercialization of the art. It's happened in music many times. You see, there's an underground form of music that starts. And while it's underground, the production value is so much higher. And there's like a lot of emotional attachment and a lot of, it just feels real. And then when it becomes commercial, it loses impetus. It loses a bit of its soul. It's the same with tattooing. But I generally think that there's more upsides to it becoming commercial and to it becoming accepted by the mainstream than there are downsides. And you can see, as technology has improved, tattoo machines have improved, inks have improved, the art and the acceptance, more people are pushing the boundaries more. You are seeing things being put onto people's bodies now, which is sometimes it's breathtaking. You cannot believe that that's a tattoo. I felt that when I was in China. There were so many people walking around. So what a lot of the artists do in Asia is, when they do a convention, they bring like all their best clients along with them. And you'll have all these scantily clad people walking around in underpants throughout the entire exhibition so everyone can see the artwork. And some of that artwork that I saw, and I saw it for the first time, I was pretty green, as I said. It's 1 year into my career when I was able to see an international stage of tattoo artwork. I was dumbstruck. I kid, the presence that these pieces have when you see someone standing there and there's this beautiful crane motif on someone's back, and when they just move slightly because they're holding a drink or they're picking something up, it's incredible. When you look at the historical, the original Japanese tattoos, there are some photographic archives where you can see what it looked like 70 years ago. They're not as refined. They're much rougher. They have an incredible soul and beauty. You just cannot look at these photos of these old Japanese tattoos and not be taken aback. But tattoos now, because of the tech and because of the acceptance and because of the skill and everything that's been learned over those 70 years, your breath is taken away in a completely different way.
I think, yeah, I mean, I think we can wrap it up right there. Just the celebration of tattoos as an art form. And I think luckily it's quite a rarity in young people today that you'd find someone who isn't tattooed.
Correct.
That's my opinion. Those people should go into museums. So me, basically. But Dan, thank you so much
for speaking to
us. And this has been an incredible, incredible conversation. Learned so much. And people can follow you on Instagram at Daniel Feinberg.
Yeah, DanielFeinberg. Nice Jersh boy tattooing.
There you go. And also at Fallen Heroes, that's where you're working from now.
That's correct. It's at FallenHeroes.
Perfect.
And go get tattooed, guys. But yeah. One little thing I just want to end off of is just from... I think every creative person can be, we just want to thank our partners who are not creatives, who continuously support us. And I think that's something that Dan mentioned there
thing.
Is that we, I mean, I know May and I are so grateful for our partners and Dan for his, and it's that we have the support. And I think that's something that I just wanted to acknowledge. Just thank you to them for allowing us to do
thank
all
you
of
so
our,
much.
Our drawings at 12 o'clock at night.
Hey, yeah. I let Jonathan play drums at 12 o'clock at night. So I needed thanks too.
You also needed thanks.
But it's been amazing. Thank you so much. And
we'll see you guys next time.
Yes. Thanks,
bye.
Guys. Really
bye.
Enjoyed.
For more information on the platform, visit our website, choppedliversociety.com, and like us on Facebook and Instagram, and bring your friends.
And this podcast was produced by Jonathan Bell at Bell Studios in Johannesburg.